This is an oral history of muralist and educator Patricia Rodriguez for the Mission Murals Project. I'm Camilo Garzón. It was recorded on July 9, 2021 in Patricia's home in San Francisco, California. The voices you'll hear will be those of filmmaker Javier Briones, production assistant Natalia de la Rosa, Patricia's, and my own. When we talked to Patricia, some of her art was on the walls of her living room, as well as photographs of her family and an extensive collection of DVDs and books. This oral history of Patricia, more than others, really showed me the importance of memory and how it comes back and forth in the way we reminisce about our lives and the details in the past that become most important to us as the years go by. This oral history delves into Patricia's early life, her upbringing and influence of her grandmother, and the importance of having graduated from college. We talked about the beginnings of the legendary mural collective Mujeres Muralistas, her life living in Balmeali for 2 decades, as well as the importance of being an example for other women and girls in her life and work. She also talked about the depictions of everyday women and people from the community in her murals, how she always wanted to go to space and that she hopes her art has inspired other women to be able to pursue their dreams, her work as a nanny and teacher in order to support herself doing artwork, and her role in preserving and amplifying Chicanx and Latinx heritage in San Francisco's Mission District and beyond. Here is the oral history. Today is July 9th, and I'm here with Patricia Rodriguez in her home in San Francisco, and we are talking to her on behalf of the Mission Murals Project. I'm here with production assistant Natalia de la Rosa, and I'm here with filmmakers Chris Tipton King and Javier Briones. We're very excited that you welcomed us here. When you think of your name, have you always been referred to as Patricia Rodriguez, or is there any other names that you use for you to be called?
I was married once, and my last name was Lindstrom.
Entonces era Patricia Lindstrom or Patricia Rodriguez?
Patricia, I kept Rodriguez in the middle, so it was Patricia Rodriguez Lindstrom.
Perfect.
Then yeah. My husband died, and so I went back to just Rodriguez.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's and okay. I'll ask you also about that later, but okay. Let me start from way in the beginning, which is your family background in Texas. Mm-hmm. We were speaking a little bit about it throughout our conversations before, even drinking some tea. When you think of growing up in Texas and your family background, what are some of the memories that come back to you?
A lot of very beautiful, positive memories. I grew up with my grandmother, and she was a seamstress and made beautiful quilts and whatever little fabrics that were left over she would give me, and she started to show me how to use a blunt needle to play with, of course, and I learned how to sew by hand, and then she would put on her Mexican music, and so we would sew until 3 a.m, and then I would get up at 12 with her. So those were really very beautiful moments, and my grandfather was a cowboy, because we lived in Texas, and the rancher would come and pick him up and his saddle, and then bring him back. And he would spend the night out in the stars and slept on his saddle in the ground and moved cattle for ranchers. And sometimes we got to go to the ranch and see what it was like to for him to see what he was doing, have a picnic with him.
What are some of those songs that you would listen to with your family back then?
Pretty much Mexican music on the radio. Late night, my grandmother would be knitting, and I'd be drawing or playing with dolls or something. But I always had fabric, paper, pens, all kinds of fun things to play with. And my grandmother was out into her zone listening to the Mexican music and remembering her youth, that kind of thing. And then she was knitting like crazy. She did beautiful things, so she inspired me.
I'm very happy that you're bringing up, you know, your grandma and your grandpa and just this upbringing and you seeing some of those things that they were doing, mm-hmm. inspiring some of what you then went and did, but even as a kid, you were also doing, right?
Yes. Like
what you're describing, even yes. just getting into these tools and even just some of these techniques,
yes.
they highly influenced you.
Yes.
When you kept growing up
mm-hmm.
in high school, middle school, how was your relationship to art, but also these Mexican upbringing in Texas as well?
Well, because we were always doing something creative in the house with my grandmother or my mother. My mother was a very good seamstress too. Everything to me was creative. I also learned how to sew and made my own clothes. And when I was in high school, I really liked my art class and wanted to do more. But that's, you know, you're limited. They'll show you how to do watercolors. And in those days, we used oil paint. And so, and then, oh, and I had catalogs that had little numbers matching the paint. So paint by number. And then I grew out of that later on and started just messing around with paint. By then, I learned about acrylics, and it was much better because you didn't have to use turpentine.
What are some of the memories that you have of when you were in high school, for example, or just about to take the next step, which we'll talk about in a second, but as you were like, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, what are some of those memories that you have of those times?
Well, I grew up in Oxnard, California, and we came from Texas to settle in Oxnard. And Oxnard High School, there were a lot of Mexican kids. So they were into folklore, dancing, music, and art. And I kept to art because that's what I felt I could do. And then I joined some of the groups, and we did, with dresses, Mexican dresses, we did, we danced in parades with the Mexican traditional dresses, and we had a band behind us that was playing music. And
those
so it was always very creative.
Very joyful, too, it
yes.
seems like.
Yes.
Just. And then came the moment you graduate high school in Oxnard, California.
Yeah.
And then what did your parents think of that next step after high school?
Yeah, you're going to graduate from high school, and I want you to get ready so you can get a job. To help out the family, I want you to buy your own little car, and that way you have a job and you can do that. And I said, no, Mom, I already registered. I'm going to Ventura College. I'm going to go to college. Mija, estás loca. Mexicans don't go to college, mija. You got to go to work. I says, well, I can do both. But, you know, I have money. I babysit all year. And I never told you how much I made. And it's stored. And so I paid for my tuition, and I have rights to school. So there were five different boys coming to pick me up 5 days a week, and my mother's pulling her hair out. ¿Qué van a decir los vecinos? Ay, Dios mío. Mom, you ask them if their daughter is going to college. Simple. ¿Estás loca? Yes, I am.
It's kind of nice that you were loca enough.
That
then you still went with it. And then not only was it Ventura, but then it was San Francisco Art Institute, which these are steps in your life, in your journey.
Yes.
Did your mom change her perception or her ideas of you after you took these steps? Because mm-hmm. it happens often with our parents
yeah.
that there's a perception, but then it might change or it might stick.
That's right.
Did it change?
Well, my parents, I had a stepfather, so that was a difficult part of the family. But he always thought I was never going to make it, and he was very critical. My mother on the other side was also very protective and helped me out. And so as she saw my progress, she began to protect me and began to say, leave her alone. You know, it's she's doing okay. And then from there, I came to the Bay Area. And once I was here, everybody was calling me. I had a lot of friends, and they were calling me, you got to hurry up. The San Francisco Art Institute is giving out scholarships. You got to apply. Yeah, but we're minorities. They won't let us in. And they said, oh, no, everybody's applying. I said, well, who's applying? So gave me my friends' names. Oh, if they're applying, I'm going to apply. So I went ahead and called the Art Institute to make sure it was true. And they said, yes, we'll send you an application, fill it out, and we'll call you for an interview. And about 2 weeks later, I got a letter that says you have to come in, bring everything that you want to show us. And I said, like what? Paintings, whatever you're doing. We want to see what kind of art you do. I said, okay. And by then I was driving a red VW bug, and I filled it up to the top with portfolios, boxes, you name it. I took it in, and I came in, and the Art Institute is on a hill, so I parked and locked the car, and I went in with two portfolios, and the instructor said, do you have any more? And I said, yes, I have 10 more portfolios. And they were this fat. So I said, but it's going to take me a while to get them. Oh, well, we'll go. They were all young men, and there were seven of them. They were professors. They all went to the car. They all took two each on each hand and brought me back to the center. And there was a huge table. It was an auditorium. And then then they were pulling their hair out. They were saying, well, how are we going to do this? I said, well, I'll help you. So I took a portfolio and just walked it and poured it all the way across the table. And then picked up another one and poured it all the way across this way. They said, oh, yeah, that works, they said. Because they couldn't figure it out. And I said, well, to save time, I'll help you. And so they would go through it, you know, like, oh, look at this. And then they show it to the other guy. What do you think of this? But it was a pile. I mean, it was a pile like this because I was prolific. And I was just painting every morning or every afternoon or after work or in between lunch, wherever, you know, I was just messing around. And I didn't have a lot of stuff. I just had pens and pencils and maybe watercolors. And somebody would give me paints. They would give me half-used oil tubes of paint. And so I had oil, I had acrylic, I had watercolor. So I had a good time.
All that you described about all of these professors going and helping you because you're like, I have so much of my material, but it's in my car. It shows how prolific you were from even such a young age. Even you were saying you have engaged with so many of these things. When you think of that moment in which you did end up going to the San Francisco Art Institute, after that time that they saw all those materials, that's a lot of, you know, effort that you put into it. And all of them were really impressed with it. They were willing to go and do this. How was that experience for you of being in the San Francisco Art Institute after that happened?
Well, they told me, we're going to let you know in a few weeks if you know, we accept you. Thank you very much. And I said, well, I need help for taking the portfolios back to the car. They all stood up, seven of them, helped me put everything back in the portfolio and took two each. And they were just really fat. I thanked them and I said, thank you so much for this interview and for helping me. And so about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I got a letter in the mail. Said, you've been accepted to the San Francisco Art Institute for a scholarship.
How did you feel?
I couldn't believe it. Pardon me?
How did you feel?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Absolutely wonderful. Because I said, well, yeah, if I'm going to want, my dream is to be an artist, so you should get training. You know, you should get training how to use watercolor, and it was magical. We had a lot of people coming in doing like a semester residency from New York, from Chicago, from LA, and everybody was doing different things. And so I learned a lot of techniques. I learned a lot of how to mess with two different mediums. And I didn't have a lot of money to get good paper. But the students that were there were rich. And they were wasteful, so they would just leave a whole half a tablet in the trash, and I go dig it out. Clean paper, beautiful, expensive paper. So I was blessed. I had lots of materials from their discards.
But look at that. Even then, you are using materials that still exist, that are still usable.
Yes.
And then you go out of your way to make art with some of the materials that were discarded.
Yes.
Which I think speaks to other things you did around your life in which maybe sometimes there weren't enough resources given to you.
Exactly.
But then you found ways, always. There was always a way in which you found other things that mm-hmm. you could use for your own art or even just in your life.
Right.
And one of the essential things that did happen happened around 1974. And you, as you said, got a very big education in a lot of different materials, techniques in your Bachelor of Fine Arts. And then there's this specific art form, very public, which is muralismo, murals.
Yes.
There's a story there of how the first mural that you did came about, or you did. When did that happen, and why did you end up doing this first mural?
We graduated in 1974, and we were all still talking to each other, all the mujeres, and we were just meeting at people's houses and discussing what was our... Everybody was asking, well, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I'm going off to Sacramento to do my master's. And some people said, well, no, I don't want to do a master's. I'm just going to, you know, be a commercial artist or something like that. And so at that point, we were in the in-between times, between actually getting into the school. I went and registered, but it's going to be in September. This was summer. So one of the mujeres muralistas, Graciela Carrillo, was living with René Yáñez, who was very important in the community with the Galería de la Raza. So he came and told Graciela that there was a business that wanted a mural on the wall, but that the famous male artist, Michael Rios and his crew, were already booked. They were already doing two or three buildings at the same time. So they said they can't find anybody to do this one mural. It's a two-story building. And we're looking, why don't you girls take it? And I was, well, they said, let's take it. I said, but they have to get a scaffolding. They have to pay for the scaffolding. They have to pay for the paint and the brushes. And not our lunch, because I know they won't do that. But, and so the scaffold people came and put up the scaffolding, and they had this huge gallons of primer and rollers and brushes. They got everything for us. And I said to them, okay, persínense, bless yourself, let's go, up. Pero si no puedo, pues no, no subas. Stay at 8 feet from the ground up. But we're going up, and we're taking just enough to pour onto the tray so that you don't trip on it or, you know, mess it up. And with rollers. So we had to prime the whole wall. And then we did that. And then the following 2 days, it was dry. And so we started sketching it. And that was, we had to use chalk line. And we put in, like, horizontal lines, 12 inches, and vertical lines at 12 inches. So 12-inch boxes we had, which was a foot. So that foot resembled the inch on the paper. So if the wall was 20 feet, the drawing was 20 inches tall. And then it was at least 35 feet wide. So it was 35 inches. And we gridded it. So everybody got a grid. And then we went to work. So what do we want? What do we want to call it? And what are we talking about? So we just started to draw and said, well, let's talk about the beauty of our culture, who we are, where we're from, the costumes, the music, the art from Mexico. Whatever comes to your head, let's get together, do some drawings on your own, get together, we'll talk about it, and then we'll assemble a scale, what do you call it? A drawing that has people talking to each other, maybe children making toys, maybe a grandmother knitting, and maybe a mariachi in the back somewhere and people dancing in the street. So we started out with drawings, and they came out beautiful. And so we got together at my house. I lived in Balmy Alley, and I had a basement. So we had a huge table, and then we said, well, that doesn't look good. Let's change this, and let's move this over, and let's, you know. And so we finally had a drawing, and it was in black and white. It was just a drawing on the black lines of the squares. And we did it on paper so we could cut it out and move things around. And so when we were settled with what it looked like, that it had balance and it had depth, and it had enough of the culture so that people who saw it would see it, would understand it. And so we said, okay, we're ready. So it was a big plaque like this of cardboard. So what I did was I took a knife and cut it in fours. And I said, which one do you want to paint? And so I said, well, I want to do the dresses. Okay, I'll take the one over here. And so we had our acrylic brushes. By then, people would come by and give us gifts. Like, here, some brushes. I know they're for the wall, but they'll work for the wall. They don't work for the canvas, but they work for the wall. And, do you want some more white paint? Yes, bring it over. Whatever you want to get rid of, bring it. Because we didn't have a lot of money. They gave us a budget, but it didn't pay for a gallon. It paid it for tubes, you know. So we had people giving us stuff. And it worked out really well. Everybody was happy, and people would come over. We were dressed in overalls and men's shoes and hats, and people would come and stare at us all day. And then when we got down and they heard us talk, and then we were wearing lipstick, they said, oh, we thought you were men. And we said, oh, well, you should have just asked us. Well, why are you women up there? Because we want to be, and we're artists. But why women? And I said, why not? We went to the Art Institute. We're artists. Why can't we paint a mural? Well, it's very unusual. Well, sure it is, because it's the first time you see Mexican women up on a scaffold. But you're welcome to come back and bring us lunch and watch us finish. And people would. They would bring us soda. They would bring us lunch. They would bring cameras, they would photograph us, and pretty soon we're in the newspapers and things like that. So it was a lot of fun. That was the kickoff mural. And after that, there were a lot more. It was always, before we finished this mural, we already committed to another one. So
it's just a beautiful image that you described of la cuadrilla, or like the dividing it in four.
Yeah.
Because it happens to be that the Mujeres Muralistas was a quarter. Let's call it that way. And
yeah.
Of course, each person brings their own energy, but as you're saying, also their ideas, or they pick different things. You pick different things.
Right.
So.
And the guys at first said, you're just doing female things. Well, what do you think? You're just doing things about war. So we're okay.
And it's such a under.
And if you don't like it, don't come back.
It's an understatement, because you were also showing Mayan, Aztec, just even the community, as you were saying, a mariachi, just different icons or different people that looked like your cousin, that looked like your friend, that looked like someone else. And that is, in fact, one of the most important things that you and the Mujeres Muralistas did, which is you wanted to show the neighborhood of the mission.
Yes.
In Balmy Alley, where you lived for 20 years.
Yeah.
Who we were as people.
Yeah.
What made you think of that as the first thing that you wanted to paint, because as you're saying, all these men painting war, painting all of these other things, are just beautifying the neighborhood too in different ways, as you were saying, Michael Rios and crew. But you decided to do very specific imagery to exalt who we are as people. Why did your mind go to that?
Because there wasn't enough knowledge about the community. People look down at us as Mexicans or Latinos or Blacks, and they don't know that we have a culture sometimes. They didn't know. So by putting these icons up, then they would have to say, well, where did she get that image and where does it come from? So they would photograph it and then maybe look it up and say, oh, it's Mexico. You know, in other words, they learned something from it. And the teachers would also bring their kids to the wall and say, what is that over there? And the kids would say, well, that's a warrior from Mexico. Wow. Right on. That was the idea, right? So it was a learning curve for us as well as for the community.
It is so essential, I think. Like one thing that we've been talking about with Javier and with some other people that we've talked to, including Consuelo, and we're going to talk to Irene on Monday too.
Oh, good.
We want to ask, there's an impetus there about children. There's there's some educational aspect because Balmy itself is so perfectly located geographically between a corridor that connects a school and even mini park, right? Why do you think it is important for children to look at these murals and not only see themselves, but also like educate the community about who they are? What is it that is important about this, in your opinion?
The reason that we did that was that I also worked in the schools, being an assistant or working as if a teacher got sick, I would come in. Things like that. And one of the things in the curriculum was not to look at the people of color in books. There was nothing, you know, other than Dick and Jane and whatever, you know, and they were all white. And so I figured if we can put some of that, some of ourselves on the wall, and so that the children says, oh, that looks like my tío. Oh, it looks like my grandmother. No, it looks like my sister. And look, it looks like little Freddy. So there's identification that makes them feel good, that it makes them see themselves, even though they're not, but they can see that, that there's brown skin, there's, you know, even if they're light skin, they still look Mexicano or Latino. And so that was the idea, is to get them to appreciate that they were important too.
What is the importance of that? What is the importance of people being able to see themselves?
To appraise themselves, to, you know, sometimes our own family puts us down. Ah, eres Mexicano, eres tonto. You know what I mean? You'll never go to school like my mother. Ay, estás loca, you're going to go to college, híjole. Don't do that, you go to work. You can buy yourself a little car, you can contribute to the rent. You know, it's economics. It's here, I'm spending a lot of money raising you, therefore you're now old enough to go out and work and put some money back into the family without thinking of their future. And so that was our emphasis, was be proud of yourself, be proud of your future and your child, and make sure that your siblings go and get an education so they don't suffer in a factory, things like that. So that's what we talked about when we were having lunch. Yeah, we should talk about even sending people up to space. I says, you know, that was my dream when I was 13. I wanted to be an astronaut. And my mother, everybody, even my friends thought I was crazy. And I said, well, I guess I never made it, but that was my dream. I wanted to go up to the planets.
But, you know, to even expand that further, like, why is it important for young people to see images like themselves on the wall at that time?
Because there was none. There was nothing out there for them at the time. And I think there was a lot of drugs. There was a lot of crime in the mission. Young kids, 13, 14, they were already in gangs. So the idea was to give them a little bit more of a different look. Maybe they could see themselves becoming an astronaut or whatever they wanted to be. But the family that can't help it, if they have a lot of kids, they're not focused on you going to college. They're focused on you growing up and getting a job and helping the family out, especially if there's a lot of kids. Only three of us, two brothers and me. But I was the girl, so I wasn't supposed to have any of those dreams. And I had a stepfather who was also not interested in me at all. So if I came up with anything on the table, it was canceled. So I says, no, I'm not going to pay attention to this. I'm going to continue with my dream.
You did continue with that dream. And one small question that I wanted to ask you is, you're talking about a Latina in space.
Yes.
That became a reality many decades later, and even the head of NASA became a Latina.
That's right.
Which is beautiful. That's right. That you were even thinking of yourself that way.
Yeah.
Did you ever represent these kinds of things in not only your murals, but even some paintings or something like
yes.
that?
Yes. I think in a mural, there's a woman in a space outfit. I forget which one now. In fact, I was looking at my slides and somebody just stole my cord. So I said, oh, well, I can't show you my slides. Oh, well, next time.
I think that that's just very important, like what Javier was also asking, because these kids, even yourself, you needed to have these images so that you could have a reflection, but also something to aspire to.
Yeah.
That looks like a version of you that you could become.
That's right.
Including also what you for Las Mujeres Muralistas and others did, which is being women in a scaffold doing really incredible public art. That was also what you were doing with your own actions, with your own body, just making art.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of Las Mujeres Muralistas, what are some of those memories that come up?
That I want to do it again. I have to figure out how and when, but I think it's a good idea. Even if it's just working with teenage girls, maybe getting them on the wall to do something. And I think that will be fun. But I have to work on that one.
Yeah, and I think you can do it hopefully soon now that things are reopening after COVID. And when you think of those times, like hanging out with Consuelo, with Irene, with Graciela, what were some of those things that happened while making, for example, the Latin America mural? Or like, what are some of the memories that you have of those times?
Very positive. People would come by and they, you know, because we were dressed in overalls and we looked like men and hats and caps, and they didn't know we were women until we got off the scaffolding to have lunch or something. They, oh, you're a woman. What are you doing up there? And I says, well, can you see? We're painting. Well, why are you painting? Because we're artists. Well, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to climb scaffolding? Because in order to paint a big wall, you have to climb scaffolding. What's wrong with that? And if you're interested, bring a chair and your lunch. And your kids.
And that's nice that you have like those memories. Yeah. What is a mural that you remember the most? Or what is one of those murals that you remember working and enjoying the most?
Latin America, because it was huge and big and it was 2-3 stories high. So it was a lot of fun. We had a big group. And
who was in that group?
Graciela Carrillo, Consuelo Mendez, myself, Irene Perez.
Can we get that one more time? And can you say the Mujeres Muralistas were, and say the names?
The Mujeres Muralistas were four of us. Irene Perez, Consuelo Mendez, Graciela Carrillo, and myself. And if other women came by and said, can we paint? We said, come on up. Well, can I go home and change my clothes? Sure. They never came back. Until a week later. Well, I have clothes now. Can I come up? Of course, come up. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And there were other people that would come by and said, do you need help? I said, not now, but give me your phone number. We're going to need help at the end. We need to prime this. I mean, not prime it, but put a sealer on it for the to protect it from the sun and so on. So we need your help, then I'll call you.
Did they ever come back?
Yeah, some of them came back. Not all of them, of course, but...
Do you remember any of their names?
Let's see, who came by? I can't remember their names right now because they were more interested in doing the work and not talking. Then maybe we just knew their first name. And I think I wrote it down someplace, but they could only give us like a day or two. And maybe some people came back, would skip a week just because they had, you know, they were busy. They had children and families and stuff.
And that's just one of the most beautiful parts of even Las Mujeres Muralistas as just a collaboration or as a collective.
Yeah.
It did start from the four of you, or it was the axis, but then on top of that, you're also involving members of the community.
Yes.
Were some of these people also women? More women than men, for example, when they were helping you with these finishing touches?
Yes. Yes, more women than men. And some of the guys came by, but like Michael Rios would come by and check us out. I thought, it looks better than I thought it would. I said, you see this water here? I'll give you a bath if you don't leave. Okay. But they were just like poking us all the time. And then at the end, we would meet with them like a month or two later. Not meet with them, but just run into them because we were in the neighborhood together. And they say, yeah, you did okay. It was good. I said, it was good. Yes, it was. No, they were always poking at us. But they did compliment us even in their own way, which was good, you know.
What was their own way? Because what I hear is, you know, that they're looking at your art, they're looking at their art, and they were thinking of it in a different way, in a way that sometimes feels a little bit condescending or lesser.
Yeah.
When, to be honest, your art was not only on the same level, but sometimes even beyond the scope, and some of the things that you did first as a collective, some of them did later.
Yeah.
So what was that relationship also with some of those men? We have spoken to Michael Rios too and other of these men, and it is always interesting because a lot of what you did was you pushed the boundaries further for the art to be even more accessible, even more inclusive, even more representative. Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that they were telling you?
At first, they really came and taunted us. Get off the scaffold, you're going to ruin your nails. You know you can't hang. And I would always threaten them with my water. Well, I could also give you a bath because you haven't bathed in a few weeks. And then they would just take off because they knew I was serious, because I would always sprinkle them. And they didn't have to do that. But in the end, as they got older, they said, Michael says, well, okay. You guys are good. Sorry about that. I said, thank you. Well, we weren't going to let them get away. I mean, they were, and Michael was a brilliant painter. I mean, you know, he was very, very good. So he thought we, as women, weren't going to be very good. So he was very critical. Most of the men were.
I'm glad
until
that,
the end.
I'm glad that they... Some of them changed their mind later.
They
but
did.
In those moments when you're doing this kind of very radical thing in that moment, radical because it was not seen. You were doing multiple things at the same time.
Yeah.
It feels like they were being not necessarily an obstacle, but they're pushing for you to not be able to succeed.
Exactly.
And one thing we were saying just before we even started this conversation is you said, tu mamá te decía, like, es que estás loca, mija, or even like stubborn. yeah, you were stubborn, and there needs to be some loca in you to push that hard and be able to succeed in the way you did.
Yes.
And the success, I think, is the community being able to see themselves, but also creating such a beautiful collective that still informs San Francisco and the world, Las Mujeres Muralistas. When you think of your happiness, your success as a person, not in terms of like necessarily like monetarily, but just like as a human, what are some of those successes that you see?
I feel very good that I pushed through and did what I wanted, because it was, you have to get to your goal and you have in life, and what is it you want to do? What is it you dream about? And make it come true. Even if you don't win monumental awards or a lot of money, get to the point of having self-satisfaction, like working with kids, having them be very happy to do art. And a lot of the teenagers helped us do the murals, and they got inspired. So it's inspiration also to youth, and especially our community. It gives them hope that they can do what they want, you know, that they can go up to space if they want. They can become the president if they want, but they have to keep their dream. And so my dream was to be an artist. And of course, my mother, like I was saying earlier, she was, "Ay, mija, Mexicans don't go to college, mija. You gotta go get a job. I can get you a job at the factory." "No, mom, I'm going to college." "Ay, mija, pero ¿cómo le vas a hacer?" I says, "I'll figure it out." So the five boys would come and pick me up 5 days a week, and my mother's pulling her hair out. "¿Qué van a decir los vecinos? Ay, Dios mío, qué pena." "Mom, you ask the vecinos if their daughters are going to college." And you do ask them, don't you, Mom? And at the end, I had her at getting my master's, and we were outside receiving our awards, and we were being called to the podium. And she goes, "Mija, how did you do this?" I said, "Con ganas, mamá." I was determined, Mom, you know, and I'm a professor now, so I'll give you some money. So, yeah. So we're getting ready to write a book. I just got everybody on all the mujeres. I called them up. I says, "We got to write a book. We got to, because it's about Chicanas from the barrio, from Mexico, from wherever we come from, that have done marvelous things. And you want to encourage your children to do marvelous things. If you want to go to space like I want to, get up there. Why not? Paint a wall. Be an engineer. Be a pilot. Be a cook. Whatever you want to do, but get there." And so if we could do it from a poor family, or, you know, because my stepfather was horrendous. You know, I was not smart. I was not good at cleaning house, things like that. But I said, okay, I'll shut that door and just do my thing. The house was spotless all the time. But and then I talked to my mother. I says, "You got to talk to him. He's got to get off my back, or I'll leave." So she got on top and told him, "Don't say anything." So it gave me a little break. But, and sometimes that happens in the family, too, that that the parents are not in agreement, or they don't believe that the, like my mother was saying, you know, Mexicans don't go to college, mija. They get a job and help the family. So that there's always that push or that pressure. So I'm hoping the book will give highlight to some of our people of color, that they can do whatever they want. They have to just focus on how to get there. And if your parents can't help you, there's always somebody out there that can help you, just so that you can do it. And so Yeah, I think that's really important.
Patricia,
so that'll be in the book.
Let me just say one thing, which is a lot of these stories that were told to you about you, you decided to create your own stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is like what you're saying, like family tells you you cannot do this or that, and that informs how we conceive of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
But you still decided to go out of your way to, I'm going to stick to this. I'm going to be determined. And
yeah,
I am an artist. And mm-hmm. you got your master's from Sacramento State.
Mm-hmm.
And you did so many great things that it's very important that you're creating this book. And
yes.
that there's these kinds of, you know, the oral history, the documentary,
right.
in which there's more ways in which people can hear another story of someone that decided to create their own stories
mm-hmm.
against what was being told to them about them.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's something essential that you're doing, even with the creation of this book, even
yes.
with, I need to talk to the other mujeres to try to tell our story.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only people that should be telling your story is you and
yeah.
them.
Yes.
What are some of those stories that you haven't been able to tell yet?
Well, basically that a lot of my friends had the same situation when I was in high school. No, my mother tied me up, and I have a job now at the bank. And I'm committed to help with the rent. And I says, well, what about your dream? You had a dream of going to college and become a cook. Well, that's out the window right now. I says, well, you got to fight for it. Is there a way that you can take some of that money that you're earning as a secretary and squirrel it under the rug somewhere and then pay for your tuition and work part-time and get your degrees so that you're still doing what you want against your parents, but that's okay because it's positive. You're not taking drugs. You're not prostituting. You're not doing anything that's negative. So eventually they'll come around. But you have to be strong. You have to be a warrior woman. You have to. Because otherwise people will step on you. So you have to. And so some of them would do it and some of them were too timid. But I think it stayed in their heads, you know, that you have to figure out your own way. You have to find the path. Somehow. And even if you just go to a junior college and not go to the university, but you have some kind of college degree and your salary is going to be higher, you're going to be more respected. And once you're there, if you do a good job, you can be promoted because you have that stigma of being in college. And especially for our Latina women, I think it's the worst because my mother was like, oh, no, you're going to get a job. And I said, yeah, Mom, I'm going to work part-time. And well, I don't know how you're going to do it. And I said, well, I babysit all year. I have lots of money. In fact, I've got some money for you now. Because I didn't spend it. I just, you know, and I used it for my tuition and to give my mom something.
Patricia, I'm wondering if you can tell us how the Mujeres Muralistas came about. How did it start?
The
Mujeres Muralistas got together.
When I graduated from the Art Institute in 1974, we were still seeing each other at parties and talking about things. And then Michael Rios, who was the boyfriend of Graciela Carrillo, said there's a building and they want a mural on it. And he told Graciela. And I said, you know, that's unusual that he told you because he would have given it to Michael Rios. I said, that means that he's looking for us to do something, but he's not saying it because he thinks he's going to get in trouble by saying it. So let's go check it out. And so we went to the building and talked to the people who own the building and said, we are checking in on some the Galeria La Raza. In the Mission, has informed us that you want a mural in the wall. And we just graduated from the Art Institute. We're artists, and we're willing to do the mural. What do you think? Is it possible? He says, yes, but you're women. I said, so what? We know how to paint. just because we're women doesn't mean we don't know how to paint. And so another woman that was in the office heard the man and came over and said, and why not a woman? What's wrong with that? And he says, well, I never thought of it that way. I said, yeah, of course you never thought, because you're a man. So he says, okay, how much is it going to cost? I says, well, I'm going to give you a budget. I'll write it all up. He wants you to pay for the scaffolding, the rental of the scaffolding, all the paint. And of course, we have a few brushes, but they're kind of messed up. So we're going to pay for the brushes too. And you don't have to give us a stipend. We'll do it for free. So the cost to you is very minimal. And he says, let me think about it, and I'll call you back. I said, okay, here's my phone number. Here's Graciela's phone number. Here's Renee's phone number. Talk to one of us. Yes or no? And so about a week later, he called me up. And he says, okay, I've talked to my staff. We really want a mural on that wall. It's just white, and it's perfect. I said, thank you. So how about the rest of the goodies? Are you going to provide them? Of course, of course, of course. Just give me a budget. So I went home and wrote a budget and brought it into him. So we need 2 gallons of red, 2 gallons of, green or whatever color it was, because we're painting a two-story building. So he got us all that. And pretty much he called the television when it was done, and they had food for us at the end, and people came by, the newspaper was there. And then people who saw that, then they invited us. That was the ticket that people invited us to do more murals after that.
So that was you and Graciela only, right?
Graciela, Consuelo Mendez, myself, and Irene Perez.
So how did you get all four of you, and how all you four of you decided to paint together?
Irene was going to the Art Academy. Graciela, Consuelo, and I had gotten scholarships at the Art Institute. There was a little group of Latinos that had gotten in. I think Michael Rios got a scholarship, but he says, I'm better than them, so he dropped out. Him and his team dropped out. He says, that's fine, But so there were just a sprinkle of Black kids and Chicano kids at the Art Institute. But I was holding on to my reins. I was going to make it all the way through. I was going to get my BA. I was determined, because my dream was to go to college. So I stayed there. So, but we met because Graciela was living with Renee. And Renee knew all these other people, and Graciela knew all of us. So we were all connected. So whenever a gig came up or some mural, somebody wanted a mural, if the guys didn't want it because too high or too crazy or too whatever, it wasn't good enough for them, they gave it to us. We didn't care. We got a wall. Sometimes they were lumpy, So we got the building manager to carve out the lump and fill it with cement and straighten out the wall for us. And since they were going to get a mural, that wasn't going to cost them anything other than the paint and the scaffold, it was a gift. So it worked.
How did you meet how did Consuelo and Irene come into the fold?
Well, Consuelo and Graciela and I, we were already students at the Art Institute, and we were friends. Irene was at the Art Academy, and she was studying graphic design. And she's a very good artist, too. So when she saw us painting, we invited her, and she was great. Yeah.
So it was like, would you say it was like more organic, or was it like really planned that it's only going to be these four Latina women painted? Because from where we're standing, it really seems like it was very intentional. It wasn't just like, oh, you can paint. It seems like it really was like, you can paint really well, and you're also Latina, and you also have these politics. You also share these politics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? But that was already understood. We were friends.
How did you all meet when you became friends? Like, what was that experience that brought you, like, that knowledge, right?
Well, because, like I said, we were, the three of us, Consuelo, Graciela, and I were at the Art Institute, and Irene was at the Art Academy. And Irene was, she had her sister, her older sister was our friend, too. So she would always say, well, why don't you invite Irene because she's a good artist? I says, well, introduce her to us. So she says, well, I'll just have you come over and see her work. So when we went over and saw her work, we said, you're on. Why don't you come and join us? She says, well, I'm not sure I'm interested in doing a mural. It's too complicated, and I have to finish this art school. I says, well, you can do it in part-time. You don't have to drop your school or drop out. Just come in and see, test it. Go on a wall with us. Go up out there and do an image and finish it and see how it feels to you. You don't have to be, you don't have to sign your name in blood. You don't, nothing. Just feel it out and see what you think. She was in love with us. She was in love with a wall and never left. We wanted to get rid of her, but she never left. She was a pest because she was the youngest. And so, oh, she would complain, and you know. But she was great. She was a good artist. And we're still good friends.
Those interactions, those are very interesting because now that's like how the three of you that were studying at San Francisco State and well, San Francisco Art Institute met Irene because of her sister. How did you meet Graciela and how did you meet Consuelo? Like, how did that happen? Was
at school,
a class? Like, but do you remember, was it a class? Was it a party? What was the context?
Well, you know, in 1974, there were like a handful of us at the Art Institute. So we knew the Chicanos, there were only three. And there were only three of us. So when we got together at lunch, we talked. That's how we met Michael Rios. But they, Graciela already knew Michael Rios. And Irene already knew Michael Rios. So, you know, there was a whole connection there. I was probably, Consuelo and I were probably the outsiders. Because Consuelo was coming in from Venezuela. And I was coming in from the mission. But I didn't know a lot of the... I didn't know Irene, for example, and I didn't know her sister until we met Michael Rios and he introduced us to the women. So we all became friends.
That makes sense. Thank you for explaining that.
And yeah, I'm curious, like, you know, again, going back to like painting with this women, like for you as a woman at the time, looking back, what did it, you know, what did it feel like to be painting with these three other women?
Fantastic. Because you're women and you chime in with each other. There's no competition. Nobody's telling you what to do. We had an image to paint that day or two. We got it done. If we needed more paint or we needed to share something, or I needed, we would take turns. Like if I wasn't sure that the figure I was working on was straight, I would ask Irene or Graciela to step back off the scaffold and tell me where it needed to be corrected. And then she says, well, he's leaning. He looks a little drunk. Okay, that's what I need to know. So I erase the face and straighten it out. So that really worked really well. And then finally, at the end of painting murals, Michael Rios and his team would come by and says, "Not bad, not bad." Well, thank you for coming by. The fact that you bothered is wonderful.
No. How was it different from painting with like men at the time? Would you say
the male artists who had been around longer than us felt they had entitlement in a lot of ways. So they felt that they had the right to correct us if things weren't right, because we were new. We were new in the game. And so they felt that that we weren't quite there yet until they saw their murals. And then they finally came by and said, I didn't think you could finish it. I didn't think that you were going to, you know, finalize it. And I said, well, never mind that. Do you like it or not? Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Because because we still wanted to punch them. But yeah, they came around in the end. But it had to be at the end because they were watching us. They didn't have confidence in us. And Irene was always told, you're going to give it up because you're going to get your back's going to hurt, your nails are going to get ruined. I mean, they would taunt her, you know, more so than me because I wouldn't let them. But yeah, so they became our friends in the end.
One thing that I want to ask is about the book, which can lead us to the manifesto. And in the book, you are saying that you're collaborating with your other mujeres moralistas.
Oh, yes.
So it's
we're Irene, all on board.
Irene, Consuelo, and mm-hmm. Graciela.
Mm-hmm. And each has to write their story. Where you come from, who your folks are, how did you get to be an artist? What were your dreams? Where did you go to school? Because that's important for people to read, that we're all different schools. Except for Graciela and I and Consuelo, we were from the Art Institute. But Irene was starting to wanting to be an illustrator, and she's very good. I don't know if you've seen her work, but yeah, she's excellent. So when she dropped out of design school, and she didn't go to the art. She did go to the Art Institute, but she didn't like it, so she didn't get a degree. Irene's stubborn. She does her thing.
When you think of this idea of creating a book, I feel like some of the interesting thing about Las Mujeres Moralistas is, as you're saying, that there was like not an ego. There was not I have to be the one doing this.
Exactly.
And even if that's the approach, there's still someone that has to have like the first initiative. And it doesn't matter who it is. Who started the idea of the book?
I did. I called everybody. I says, I want to write a book of the Mujeres Moralistas.
¿Por qué?
Because it's important. My goal is to inspire other young people of color, black, Chicanas, Chicanos, whatever. That if you have a dream, you got to live it. You got to get there.
Why is it important for you personally? Because I get why it's important for us, and that's why we're so interested in this yeah. project. But why is it important for Patricia Rodriguez to create this book with your friends and colleagues?
Because I think there's not enough books on artists saying to the kids who want to do something outside the realm. Being an artist is crazy for parents. Ay, estás loca. ¿Qué vas a hacer con el arte? No vas a hacer dinero. You're going to be a starving artist, you know. Who's going to hire you? You know, that kind of thing. So parents don't really encourage you to be an artist. They want you to go to college. They want you to get a degree in science, medicine, nursing, whatever they know that is a doable job so you can survive. And I don't blame them. But at the same time, if you have a dream and you're going to be miserable being a nurse, I mean, why not, you know, do both? You can do nursing maybe once a week or at a senior home or something, and then you can continue with the other side. But at least there's a book that, as Chicanas that didn't come from money, you know, came from regular parents, you know, regular community people, ganas. What is ganas in English?
Yeah, like
desires,
will
to do yeah. things that you dream of and to make them come true. And then, you know, the parents sometimes they're poor. They don't have any models to work from, and the child says, "Well, I want to go up on to the moon. I want to explore. I want to be a scientist. I want to do something out of the ordinary." And the mother and or father say, ay, que locas. Those are just dreams from somebody else. You go to school and you get a mechanic job and you get a nursing job. That's secure. And you can buy a house with that, buy a car. But going to the moon or being an artist is frivolous. Right? So, and who's going to give you the money anyway? Who's going to support you? So I think the idea is that this book is to encourage maybe not just the kids, but the families, that if we did it, I mean, I had to work part-time. I babysat all the time, so I always had money. And so that paid for a lot of things, paid for my tuition, my transportation to college, my books, my lunch. I mean, I had to figure it out because it wasn't going to come from my parents. My mother worked in the laundry. My stepfather didn't like me, you know, that kind of thing. So I said, why suffer? Just, you know, put your money away and do it. Do what you want to do in your way. And you're not breaking the law. You're going against the parents' wish, but that's just normal.
So what was the impetus for the manifesto, for the creation of it?
Well, the whole thing was just to share the talent and not be greedy with it, but it's for everybody and for people to learn from it and be encouraged to do their own thing too, because that's what we had to do. And the freedom we got from it was wonderful, because we didn't have, you know, we didn't have microreels on our con una varita, you know. No, you got to erase and start over. And if we saw something that didn't work, we would talk about it, you know. The face is too big, or it doesn't work, let's change it. And we never had any problems with that, because everything had to be done so that people would appreciate it and not find something that they didn't like. So, yeah.
And it's such an important document. Probably that's the first time that the four of you put it to paper.
Yes.
And what was the effect on you and on the Mujeres Moralistas, or even other people, when you had the manifesto in the 70s? You had created this document that speaks to you in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. There might be things that changed, because that happens with time, but it is still a document of your thoughts and your goals and also your philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think prompted you to create this document? Why is it important to create this document in the 70s?
I guess because we were seeing that we were the first group of women to be brave enough to do these crazy things, to get up on scaffolding, to go paint, because it was usually the males, right? And there were no women painting. Not even the white women were painting. In fact, we influenced quite a few white women to also paint, because then they saw us doing it and they start doing it, right? But, and it was also like a challenge for us to see if we could do these things, considered as a man's job, you know, pretty much assembling a scaffold and climbing it and then pulling up gallons of water and paint and boxes that were heavy, you know, up three stories, two or three stories, just to get the job done, and priming the wall. We had to learn how to do all of that. But it was so exciting. It was so liberating, because we didn't have anybody telling us what to do. We just told each other, you missed a spot. Oh, yes, I forgot. So you go back and paint it. But it flowed very well, too.
Yeah, there's this part here in the manifesto that always sticks out to me when I read it. And it's that, you know, part where you say, were you all right? Art close to where it needs to be has always really spoken to me. I wonder if you could kind of talk about sort of like, what did it mean for you as women to paint this imagery on the streets?
Because it's like a billboard. It's a billboard that says, you're beautiful, you have education, or you could have these things. You could reach the moon if you want to, but you have to put your mind to it. And so, and also giving the community credit. You can see women carrying babies, or a woman from Mexico that looks like she just came over across the border. Whatever it is that the images were, they were to be giving credit to the people that lived in the mission. I think when we had a discussion, we all agreed that our people, as wonderful and as talented and as creative as they are, as Latinos in the community, are never praised, are never recognized, are never given awards, unless somebody pushes for you. So we decided that whatever we put on the wall had to honor them, give them, when they saw the wall, they go, oh, that looks like my tia, my tia Maria. Oh, she looks just like my tia. Why would she put up somebody that looked like my tia? And somebody else would answer in the street, or we would say, well, because she lives here. And she's just as beautiful as you are, or as anybody else. And Latinos are beautiful. They have different colors. They have different color of hair and eyes. Yeah. And they're very creative. They figure it out. Look at all the immigrants that come here and become successful. I mean, they're here for a reason, to survive. But once they watch what you do and they figure it out, they put everything together and they become engineers. I mean, it's part of giving grace or giving credit to who we are as a Latino, Mexicano, whatever we are. That we're smart, beautiful, and creative.
It's not just paint, right? No, it's not. I think so much of the time, so much of the immigrant experience is associated with struggle and pain, and that is, in fact, part of it.
Yeah.
But that's not all of it.
That's not all of it. And there were a lot of murals that had to do with revolution and, you know, politics, and we stayed away from that because nobody had been bothered to do something about beauty and color and art and whatever. You know, that's the other side of us, is that we're creative and we paint, we sew, we build houses. I mean, we have all this other artistic, creative ingenuity that people hide because they're afraid to show it. And, you know, so that's how we came about doing these things. And we were questioned, too. Sometimes, well, why don't you do something with the politics of what's going on in Latin America? I says, well, there's at least 10 murals doing that, so we don't need to do that.
It's so radical that you decided to create art that really was about us being able to make art, mm-hmm. right? Because, as you're saying, there were a lot of other murals, and even your murals still were political,
yeah,
in the sense that you all were the Mujeres Muralistas.
Yeah.
That's a political act. Right. The act of, I am doing this thing that I've been told I cannot do because I'm a woman.
Exactly.
And that is indeed already radical. It already is an example. And this manifesto is a beautiful document that speaks to that time and this attitude. And it's very nice to see that some of those ideas of the manifesto are still alive, mm-hmm. but they have even become what is now this book that you mm-hmm. wanted to initiate with your other Mujeres Muralistas.
Yes.
Because it's about legacy,
yes.
but not legacy in terms of like what happens when I'm not here, but legacy of the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still having an impact on these people that happen to look like me, or even if they're not, that they know that someone like us can even do something like this.
Yeah.
What is something that you are thinking about in terms of things that you haven't been able to say before, in terms of, for example, you've had various other oral histories that I remember listening to. And with the years, sometimes we get more comfortable or not with being able to say, you know what, I really wanted to say this, but I haven't been able to say it. In your own experience, what are some of those things, or is there something that you haven't been able to say before that you would like to say now?
Well, that's why the book is important, is to say that if you have a dream, if you're a young Latino, Latina, and you have a dream, and things have not there, you don't have the parents or the backup when you have that dream, which is teenager, being a teenager, then those dreams fade away. They go out with a wash. But if you are, if you have that that desire, it's so powerful sometimes that you don't let go of it, and you look for ways of getting it out. You look for doors. You look for people that can help you with it. The fact that Graciela says, well, there's a mural. I mean, we could do a mural on this wall. And we all just went, ding, this is it. Let's do it. She says, really? You want to do it? You want to climb scaffold and do it? I said, hell yeah. Let's do it. Why? I was just asking you. I says, well, you asked us for a reason. Aren't you interested in doing it? Well, if you do it, I'll do it. I said, well, go, good, yeah. Let's, you know, we'll need to not just be two of us because it's a lot of work, you know, to assemble or to disassemble a scaffold. You need at least four people, two on this side and two on the other side. So you can lift the bars and then hook them back in. So I said to her, you know, I think this is a wonderful idea. Let's have dinner at my house. I lived in Balmeal. So I had Graciela, I had Irene, Consuelo, I grabbed because she was new from Venezuela. So I got her as a friend and brought her over to my house. And she was an excellent artist. And so I said, look, we are artists and I have a proposition for you. What if you can help by let's get dreaming. Let's think about things that we can do on the wall. I would like to start getting some murals done. There's other murals that are being done, and I think there's other women doing murals. So why don't we do that too? He says, yeah, but it costs money. I said, yeah. So what? We'll get paint donated. People will give us paint if we. What I discovered was that my neighbor, when he found out across from me that we were painting murals, he says, you want to take this red paint? It, just before it goes, you should use it. I said, how many of those gallons you have? Three. I said, I'll take all three. What else you got? He says, I have white, I have blue, and I have green. Get them over here to my garage. I'll take all of them. Are you sure you could use it? I can use it. Give it to me. What were you going to do with it? He says, well, that's what I was thinking, that maybe if you wanted it, you know, I wouldn't have to throw them out and feel bad. So they went up on the wall. So I would drive him to the murals. I said, that's your paint. You've done good for your community. So, and people would bring us gifts, too. If they'd know that they weren't going to use the paint, they would deliver it. And I would open the morning, I opened the door, and there was paint there, a little note. For you. Oh, I said, well, who gave it to me? And then later on I found out it was somebody, but they didn't want to leave a name. So, yeah. So that's how we got our paint. We didn't have money. We couldn't buy even a gallon of paint. And we needed gallons for a wall. Otherwise, you know. And then it's bad to work from a little can because you go to the paint store and they mix the wrong one. And then you have two tones of the red, and you go, "Oh God, that looks horrid." Yeah, so that's how we did it, and people would bring us by gifts too. They'd bring us lunch. They would come and photograph us and talk to us, and we would talk to them from the scaffold. Okay, you have 5 minutes. Why? Because we got time on the wall. Do you want to come up and paint? You can come up and paint, and we can talk. Oh no, I don't do that. Okay, well, I'll see you later.
I think the name Mujeres Muralistas, to someone that speaks English, in Spanish, it is what you are. It's the identity. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're mujeres, we're muralistas, we're the Mujeres Muralistas. Where did the name come from?
Who was it that helped us with the name? What was his name? Ralph Maradiaga. Because we were saying, pues somos las mujeres, las muralistas. And we didn't put it together as mujeres muralistas. We just said las muralistas. We're muralistas, mujeres. And oh, but how many men do you have? None. We're all mujeres. So we had to explain it that way. And so Ralph says, "Pues son las mujeres muralistas." I said, "Yeah, you're right." So yeah, and he was an angel. He was really, really super with us and helped us out in all kinds of ways.
Think that's essential. It's such a nice thing to hear that like someone else saw it, but mm-hmm. it wasn't like to claim like, oh, I came up with the name. No, it's like, hey, that's what you are. And yeah. it's nice that then you adopted that as the name of the yeah. four of you working yeah. together. Yeah. And one thing that I think is essential, not only in your life as an artist, but also just as an educator, yes. is that this work was for children, as we were talking about yeah. earlier too, yeah. to see themselves. And there's Mini Park, which is such an important aspect of
yes.
your life and the work that you did. There's even this quote, I think, these days in Mini Park of, there's like this little mural with a quote from Ralph that it says, "It is only through artistic, social, and political ideologies that we ascertain and retain a place in history and document it for our children." And in his role as, you know, in Galería La Raza, but also in your role mm-hmm. as an artist, as a person that really made sure that Mini Park was what it became.
Yes.
It is such an essential part of the mission and of just the experience of children even to this day. What are some of the important things you remember when it first started? Because you were there when it first started. What are some of those things?
You mean when we first started painting?
In Mini Park, yeah.
At the Mini Park? It was very interesting because it was a family park. Therefore, all the parents brought their children there. And so the parents were curious as to why we were doing this mural. And we said, it's for the community. It's for families. And the Mini Park is important. And I know that the guys wanted the Mini Park, but they were going to do something else that had nothing to do with families. They were going to do, I don't know if it was a war scene, but it had soldiers in it and stuff like that. So when we submitted, because we had to submit the drawing to the park commission or the park people. And we decided that we do something that had to do with families and you know, the park and children and parents and grandparents. And so it becomes a family gathering, and people could then relate to the family. Does that make sense?
It does. And why do you think that it's essential for the art to also talk about the people that are going to be interacting with the art? Because in that specific sense, it's families and it's children,
yeah.
and then the art that they are surrounded by,
yeah.
and sometimes even collaborating in making, is about themselves too.
Mm-hmm.
Why is mm-hmm. it important that it's both things?
Well, because it's their park, and it's kind of like a mirror. They see themselves. They see themselves with the grandmother, the grandfather, or the family being together. And if there's little animals too, so there's a connection. There's a connection to the art, and to they feel welcome with it. And so when we finished the mural, we would walk back and check it out and sit there and have lunch, and we would hear people talking about it. I brought you here because I wanted you to see the mural, and I want you to explain to me what's going on, that we tell the kids. And they were like 8, 10, 12, and then they would crash with each other trying to talk at the same time. So what was going on in the mural? So I said, wow, it works, you know. That's what it's for. So I was worried. I said, what if they don't like it? But I played Anonymous and went there one day, and I said, well, this is good. This is what it's for. It works. Because at first, other friends said, well, you know, it's not that exciting. you know, maybe you should change it. And I said, well, no, I'm going to give it time to see how people react to it. So the most important people were the ones that come to the park with their children, the grandparents, the parents, the uncles, the kids.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, I think in this essay that I pulled up earlier today, where you were talking, what did we listen to outside, you say that there is, you know, two motivations for you know, starting the Mujeres Muralistas. One was recognizing that there have been no successful women muralists in the Mexican mural movement. And two, you wanted to show that women could also paint a large outdoor mural. Three was the fact that there was a lack of support for main painting murals in the mission, and there were who were critical subjects. I'm wondering, you know, at that time in your life when you started painting, were these thoughts very intentional to you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this something that you look back on now and think, oh, we did that? Like at the time where you were started painting the murals, was there a political motivation behind painting with all of these women?
With all of the women?
With all the women.
Yes. Yes, because I think we were all eager and willing to paint murals that were life-size. I mean, it's a gigantic canvas, really. And everybody was excited about it because it was new and different. We've always painted, you know, watercolors or canvas this size or, you know, small canvases, but never a large wall for a building. And the large wall just gave us lots of space, lots of ideas, and it depended on the subject matter. Like the mini park was for families and grandparents and people to sit there and just look at the mural and relax. So it was a time to be outdoors, get fresh air, you know, be stimulated by the mural. And so the kids would also be there and be happy, and they could see themselves in the mural as well. Because they could see it's a family unit, and then the people can see. The grandmothers, I would hear them say, ¿Y quién ven allí? ¿Pueden ver a la abuelita? Can you see the grandmother? Things like that, you know. And so when we became observant, nobody knew who we were after the mural was done. They didn't know we were the artists because they never saw us painting. But the reaction that they had was real and assuring that we had done the right thing for the mini park.
And, you know, talking about the mini park, what was it like to be paid? You say in the video that this was the first time that anyone has ever paid you
mm-hmm.
as an artist.
Yes.
What was it like to be paid for your artwork?
Whoa, big time. It was really wonderful because, you know, you're working like a man, really, because you have to carry all these heavy buckets of water. You have to carry heavy equipment. You have to carry ladders. You have to assemble the scaffold or take it down at the end of the day. So you're working very hard. You're working physically hard. I mean, I'd come home and take a bath and on bed I went. Wake up at late night and had something to eat and went back to bed. Because it was physical. It was physical work. Because sometimes you don't leave the paint available to, you don't take your eyes off the paint because there's a lot of little squirts that will come and stick their hands in and then go to the wall. So you have to be careful. You know, you have to be on alert. So we had to have some of the artists kind of watching while we were working so that we can be protected. Because once we're on the wall, we're gone. We're really into the wall and we're not paying attention to who's around us. And then there were men, too, that would come around and try to touch us. So that was a strange thing, too. Especially because the mini park was an open field.
There's like two things there, which is you've been mentioning Dar, which is other muralists, but also now you're, for example, mentioning other men or other people that were just walking by and then being actually not only disruptive, but it sounds like abusive too, like to your not only art and work, but also to you.
They would get a little bit too close. And then I turn around and said, you have to back up because I can't breathe. And they go, what do you mean you can't breathe? I says, you're too close. I feel your breath. So do you mind standing 10 feet back? Besides, you're making me nervous and I can't paint. Oh, well, I didn't know I was doing that. Well, now you know. So
that's good that you were setting those boundaries, but it must have been scary. Were those boundaries respected normally, as you just explained?
Yes, they stood back, and then when they saw other people that heard me, then they realized that they weren't alone, that we weren't alone. And so they backed up. But if we were there, I never went there by myself. I always, that gave me a clue. We never come here, I told all the other women, we never come here by ourselves. Even if it's a parent with kids, it's still a man, and he can ignore the kids while they're on the swings, and they can come and harass us. So you come as two, no more than, never come alone. So it worked out.
I think that's essential, because one of the things that is now becoming clearer to me is also, it wasn't only intentional that the Mujeres Muralistas became the Mujeres Muralistas. It also was a matter of, like, I need to be safe. And if it's at least two or more of us, we'll at least be able to be safer in terms of, at least we're more people. We can, there's going to be someone else that we can go to and just like, hey, I need support. Do you think that's also part of what led to not only the creation of it, but made it be easier to continue with the Mujeres Muralistas?
Yes, I think we learned a lot from being up. If there were only two of us, it was a little sketchy. But if there were more than three, then we could watch for each other. Because once you're on the wall, you're distracted. You're painting.
Yeah.
You're not paying attention who's behind you. And so, but if there's at least four of us, then we keep an eye on each other. And it's because it was isolated, it was even more, we were more vulnerable. I don't know if I could say that word. But yeah, so that really alerted us that we had to be careful, because it was an open field. Whereas when you're in the scaffolding, you're safe because we can see people coming up. And if they continue coming up, we give them a bath. It's cold water. And that'll cool them off. But when you're out in a park, it's a little different. And even if the parents are there, they're so busy having lunch or picnic that they don't watch what's going on with anything else except the kids.
It's, to me, like, it sounds so incredible to know that these are hardships that were happening while you're working, but the goal was still clear, which is, we want to do something so important, which is create this space, or already this space that exists or is starting to exist in a better way, which is the mini park. We're also going to create art around it, and we're going to do it so that these people that look like us also feel like they can relax here, that they can also see themselves, that they can bring la abuela, as you were saying.
Yeah.
And that feels also political, because as Javier was saying earlier, there's the experience of Latin America or just even immigration or others that are always embedded in a way that might be too generalized.
Yes.
Right? The always is there because the starting point becomes like pain, suffering, but no, like, you can still relax. You can do very hard, laborious work and come to the park and be with your kids and see nature. All of these things are things that these days we take for granted, but you already were thinking of these things that are, even for the health, mental health of the people that lived in the neighborhood and the kids. And that's become entrenched into the, I think, identity of San Francisco and the mission. So it is incredible to see all these ripples that you have continued creating, even with those decisions. Sometimes not thinking about it, right? Not all of them, but some of them, yes. So thinking about all those ripples, and especially these days, what are some of the ways, including the book, that you see that legacy that you have in San Francisco, in the mission, in the lives of people here? What are some of those things?
Well, I think, I feel that, you know, with all the knowledge we have and the experience that we had as mujeres muralistas, gave us an open door to do more, like the book. And in the book, there'll be descriptions about what it was like to be a woman and painting on the wall, and some of the things that we had to take care of, some of the not working alone, not working two, but maybe three or four, so that we would protect each other, because there was still danger in the surroundings. And it wasn't that we were paranoid, but because we were women, we were targets. And so in society, men look for people who are vulnerable or not paying attention to what's going on, so that you can be harassed, attacked, or whatever. So we had to use those methods in order to be protective, because we were in the open field and people were all around. But and we could also feel when people were getting a little too close, and then we would sit together and look out at them, and then and pull out our lunch or something, so that they knew that we were watching them. They knew that we were watching them. So there's a lot of, we did a lot of protective things that way, almost subconsciously, because we were in the open field. And it's a little different, like you say, you know, people can come up and touch you, and you don't know. Or they gently touch you, but you don't want that. You know what I mean? And they did it because we were women, and see how much they could get away with. So we had to be on the lookout. Or we would invite friends when we were in a deadline. We would invite friends that didn't want to paint but wanted to come with us. And says, okay, you feed us lunch, you come out, have lunch with us, and bring your lunch. We have our lunch already. But you'll be sitting on a bench looking at us. And they didn't know that we'd set them up so that, because there was a lot of guys in the park and they were already eyeing us. In other words, every day it got more men in the park. So we would invite them to come, and we were nonchalant having our lunch, and we would all walk each other to the bathroom, things like that, because it was an open field. So we wanted to be careful. So that's how we learned right away that we couldn't just be focused on the mural and not pay attention to the rest of the environment. And that paid out.
I'm sorry that you had to experience that. That's terrible that you had to experience that level of harassment from men in that community, in our Latino community. It's terrible.
Looked innocent, but they weren't. So what we had to do was be wise and just be in the lookout.
I'm curious if you also felt, at the same time you were feeling vulnerable, if you were also feeling powerful about taking space on that wall and taking public space as women on that mm-hmm. wall. Did you feel that as well?
Not so much. I mean, we took it as a normal thing, because we were already had decided that we could do murals and we could paint big. It was just a big canvas. But what we learned from it is that we had to be more careful of our safety, of the safety in an environment like that, an open environment, because that's when people take advantage of you. Because you're facing here on the wall and you're not paying attention to your back. So we made an agreement that there should be more than two, and there should always be one watching. Because we had a few scares, but we had hammers with us, just in case. Because I can swing a hammer. But everything worked out. You know, they realized that we were looking at them. And it's when you don't, it's when you know, things happen when you're not paying attention. So we had to pay attention to the environment as well as the painting. And so we took turns.
So it worked out. In many ways, it was twice as difficult for you than it would have been for a man, because, you know, if you're a man, you're just worrying about painting.
Right.
Worried about being harassed.
Yeah.
You know, you had to worry about multiple things.
Yeah.
Safety.
Exactly.
And your artwork.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
it's
right.
Nice to hear that because of the difficulties. It's nice to hear that you created a system of support, but also a collaboration with not only the three mujeres,
yeah,
muralistas that were part of the collective, but also other people surrounding you.
Yes.
Did you find some of that strength that Javier was referencing, maybe in the connection with these other people, in the friendship, in the support system?
You mean from the outside or as friends?
As friends, like, did you find some of that strength to be able to do all of those things? Like, you're painting, but you also have to be worrying about these men bugging you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find strength in knowing that you had some friends to rely on in that moment?
Yes. And then we told each other, okay, if you're going to be doing this figure and you're thinking you can do it today, you're going to be actually really focused on the wall. So what I'm going to do is mix the paint for you or get you water or whatever you need. And then we take turns. You can sit back and eat your lunch and watch me and then watch the surroundings all the way around you, all the way around us. Because there were some scary times, you know, where people come up in a group and they said, why are you here and why are you women? Because we're women. And why are you painting? Because we're painters. And what do you want? Well, we just want to know if we can have a date with you. I said, no, you can't have anything with us. You get close, we got knives. We did. They weren't very big, but, you know, little knives that hang up on the... We had to because people would get real close. You could feel their breath on us. So I said, no, that can't happen because you don't know what they're thinking. So that really helped us be ready. And as soon as we turned around and faced them, we did like with our equipment, we did a periphery around us. It says, you don't step over this. If you do, you're in trouble. Because they can get very brave, you know. And who knows what they're going to do. So, yeah. And some people did touch us. And that was scary, you know.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah, we were mixing the paint and all of a sudden somebody says, oh, those are beautiful hands. I go, you do that again and I'm going to give you a bath of paint. You have to explain it to the police what you did. But you had to be tough otherwise. In an open field like that, yeah, it's kind of risky at times. But they think they can take over, you know, they think they can manipulate you. But you have to be wise. Otherwise, it can, if you're too much into your painting and not paying attention of your surroundings, you can be in trouble.
The last thing I wanted to do is ask you, you know, oral histories are, as sometimes you've had that opportunity, it's a way for you to say who you were or who you are. And sometimes they're in conversation, right?
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing because you've lived an incredible life that we're trying to celebrate by being able to help you tell the story because it's your story. What is something you want to say as a matter of conclusion to this oral history?
What? Say that again?
How do you want to finish this oral history? Like, what do you want to say that you hadn't said before?
That I haven't said before? Well, I'm very happy that I have been a muralist, that I have painted large-scale murals. It really was a challenge, and it really took me to many places. It made me strong. It made me realize that I could do anything if I put my mind to it. And at the beginning, I was very frightened because I thought, what if we can't finish? What if all the other women feel the same and they don't come back because they have children, or and then I'm left alone? There were all these little things that you think about at night. But it just turned up to be the opposite. It gave us all strength, and it gave us all, peace of mind that we had each other out in the public. So, but because to be alone, like I said, you can get in trouble with some crazy people out there. But yeah, it really worked out to have everybody back you up, and you know.
Patricia, how would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? Oh dear. Well, I have always worked with young people, you know, from maybe 10 years old up to being teens. And it's been so gratifying to work with children and young people. And they always ask me questions that they wouldn't ask their mother, you know, or father. And so I helped them out. And I said, well, you shouldn't be ashamed to ask questions, because that's how you learn. And, that I was good to the community, and that I cared about the community, and wasn't afraid to give young people advice, and at least put the idea in their head. Maybe the parents had already put it in their head, but here you have a verification coming from a stranger. Probably a brave and crazy artist. Because you have to be brave and crazy to do these things. I mean, we were the first group of Latinas climbing up and doing murals up 2 or 3 stories high. And everybody warned us, you're not going to like it. And you shouldn't be working like a man. And it's not a woman's job. And it looks bad that you're a woman. Things like that. So we say, well, it's no different. People can't tell we're women up there. They think that we're men. They only find out when we get down, because they can see who we are. But they don't bother us because we're up in safety. And if they did, we would be able to manage all the time. We had hammers, we had screwdrivers, we had lots of water to give them a bath. I'm not saying that those are good weapons, but it's a deterrent for sure. And that we were brave enough to... The last part is that we were brave enough, or I was brave enough, to do these things that were not supposed to be not for women, right? To be daring and get up there on the scaffold and do murals. And all the other women felt the same way. It was liberation for us, in other words. And then even then the men questioned us, why would you want to do that anyway? Because we wanted to. Why not? Well, it seems to me that it's not very feminine. So what? So what? As long as you like the art. Do you like the art? Yeah, it's okay. I said, well, then what's wrong with it? I hope that answers the question.
Yeah.
And that I really want to, but I hope that my story also encourages other young women to follow their dream. Because like my mother said, ay, mija, Mexicans don't do that. Mexican girls don't do that. So, there was no way of talking to my mom about any of the dreams I had, and I had to figure them out myself. And then when I would show her the slides of what we did, you did that? How did you get up there? To the scaffolding. But who allowed you to do it? The city. But why? Things like that. And in school, too. But who the kids, when you talk to a fifth grade group, fifth graders, this is what we did and how we did it, and this is the mural. And, well, how did you know what to do? Well, we draw it first, and then we have a sketch, and then we copy the sketch onto the wall. Yes, but who gave you permission? I said, well, of course, it had to be the person from the building that gave us permission, or the school. But they trusted you? You're women. Isn't that amazing? I would say, who taught you that? Oh, well, I was told that women didn't know how to do anything. Fifth graders, sixth graders. Can you imagine? I said, whoa, okay. Well, now you know. We can. They were a trip. We never expected that from the kids. But I think, you know, again, the family, wherever they come, you know, the women, like my family, my stepfather never thought anything of me or what I was going to do or anything. So.
Patricia, thank you so much for letting us here in your home. Javier, Natalia, Chris, and I, like, it is a privilege to be able to talk to you.
Oh,
and
you're
we're
wonderful.
Happy to have heard so many of your stories and also just being able to learn more about you and hopefully, as we're saying, present and future generations are able to do that as well.
Yes.
So thank you from all of us. I hope that after listening to Patricia's oral history, you got a deeper sense of her goal to inspire younger people to chase and live their dreams. Patricia's life and stories showed me the importance of dreaming, of reaching, of doing something that you want to do, even if people have told you not to. And always doing it con ganas, like you mean it, as she said during the oral history. When we finished the oral history, Patricia showed us more art. She had organized a few slides of no longer extant murals from her time with the Mujeres Muralistas and loaded them onto a Kodak Carousel 750H projector to show them to us. This is audio from her turning on the projector and showing us the value that exists in remembering our life and work. All of these, while a book on alchemy by Swiss scholar and Jungian trained psychologist Marie-Louise Bonfrance was behind her. This kind of magic of being able to go back in time to find the golden memories and this book in the back while that happened were a synchronicity for me. This oral history of Patricia Rodriguez was a collaborative effort, like murals also are. Team behind it was
Erica Gengzi,
Maisa Plunk Graham,
who served as executive producers,
Natalia de la Rosa,
who served as a production assistant. The rest of the team included
Javier Briones,
Kevin Carr,
Chad Curver,
Carrie Cordova,
Stephanie Garces,
Melissa San Miguel,
Chris Tipton King.
And it was produced and mixed by me, Camilo Garzón. The Mission Murals project was organized by the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and funded by the Institute for Museum and Library Services. Thanks for listening.